I'm Zena.
And I'm Renee.
Welcome to When You Just Want a Glass of Wine, a podcast dedicated to making wine drinking more approachable and inclusive. Join us as we decode the language and unlock the customs of wine drinking. Cheers.
Cheers. Okay.
All right. El Conquistador.
Well, welcome to this episode of When You Just Want a Glass of Wine, and particularly this episode of Guy Talk with Jimmy Taylor.
Yeah.
So, cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Cheers. Do a little sip. So, Jimmy, take it away.
Right after my little sip.
After a little sip, I know. You don't want to have bad luck.
Welcome to Guy Talk. This is, I believe, my first episode on season two.
Yes.
And we're going to start off with fast food meets wine, because what other way to get that engine going and rolling? This is fun for me because I have never actually paired wine with fast food before, so it's going to be a learning experience
for me. It's a magical thing. It's a magical thing.
I remember when we were first at Beauty, and one of our guests suggested that they were going to go have pizza and wine. And I looked at Zena and I was like, that's a thing?
Oh, yeah.
You can do that? And she goes, yeah. And she goes, what have you always had it with? I was like, beer.
Also works. And sometimes after a lot of tastings, beer is what you want. But so we also have a very special guest today.
We do. We do. We have a very special guest. We have Michael Warner here with us from Decanter. He is the co-founder of Decanter Wine and Boutique on Capitol Hill. This little neighborhood shop he runs with his wife, Michelle Lim Warner. They opened Decanter in 2013, making wine approachable, fun, focused on small producers.
I'm dropping the ball here right now.
Sorry, guys.
No, you're right. On small producers,
absolutely. I'm out of practice here. Michael's certified specialist of wine and one of those rare people who can explain...
Words.
Yeah, sorry.
What are we explaining? Terroir.
Terroir.
Terroir without putting you to sleep. Yeah. I like it.
It's good. And I have no vocabulary in wine.
Introduction alone shows you there are kind of people.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what we're doing right here today. And we're lucky to be hosted at Decanter today. So thank you for having us in this beautiful place.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited. And honestly, the topic for tonight, just pairing wine with fast food, is something that... You know, it's not intuitive. I think a lot of times we think about wine as being something that, you know, has to be paired at a Michelin-starred restaurant or something fancy. But I can tell you, with the folks that walk into the store, Monday through Thursday, it's always, I've got takeout, I'm getting pizza, you know, I've got the Thai, you know, whatever the case might be.
Absolutely.
And it's just about, you want to relax in the evening and have
say absolutely, because like I said, this is new to me.
No, it's fantastic. I mean, one of my favorite pairings, which we're gonna start with, I think, and we've done it actually at, Zena's done it at Beauty. Mm-hmm. Zena's working right now and not having as much fun as we are, but she'll be here later.
This is technically work for
us. This is absolutely work for us. It's research and work and the whole thing. But champagne and fried chicken.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
It's a classic.
You talk to any sommelier and you talk about what one of their favorite pairings is, and it's champagne and chicken. And, you know, as not too far from that, you think about like cava and popcorn, prosecco and potato chips. You know, all of these little snack foods with a little bit of fried...
You guys think about this. How do you get to these conclusions? Is it just trial and error?
You don't just wake up in the morning
thinking about
champagne. I want to have Popeyes.
Popeyes, yes, but like not putting it with prosecco with Lay's potato chips. I wouldn't have come up with that.
Well, but you do. You already know, because it's like one of my favorite scenes in Jurassic Park when he's like, I had a lot of salty stuff, so now I need something sweet. Mm-hmm. And you do the pairing. And so you've got the acid in the champagne and the bubbles and everything go great. And the fruit go great with the salty of the fried chicken. And Julia Coney, who's a wine person in D.C., and I love her podcast as well. And what she always talks about is she's like, no, if you're doing champagne with potato chips, it's got to be Lay's because they're saltier. Like, she's serious about it. And I'm like, respect.
And she's absolutely right.
Yeah. You want the salt, like, you know, salty French fries. McDonald's French fries would have been perfect. But it's just like that kind of a thing. So,
no, it's funny you talk about the salty and sweet together. Mm-hmm. you know, when my wife and I first started dating, you know, we were in college, so, you know, a date was McDonald's. And she was the one who introduced me to putting the French fries in the milkshake.
Oh, yeah.
Or in the sundae. Yeah. And, you know, she swears by it and still does to this day.
There are a lot of people that do that, yeah. And the Wendy's and the Wendy's Frosty as well. Wendy's Frosty's and the fries, too.
That's the way to go.
They're all the same. Yeah. I mean, it's a great pairing. So, Jimmy, why don't you start us through what our pairings are here?
All right, so first up, as Michael was just talking about, and I'm going to have him walk us through maybe what we're going to experience or taste or how he'd like to start with it, but we're going to pair Popeye's chicken with our champagne. It's grease meets glamour as far as I'm concerned here.
It is grease meets glamour, absolutely. That should be a bumper sticker.
It's going to be another T-shirt. It's going to be another T-shirt that we make for the
I feel like that describes Michelle and I. But I think before we jump into tasting these pairings, it's probably worth talking about just food and wine pairing
absolutely.
In general. Yeah. I mean, so many of us are taught, you know, red meat and red wine, fish with white wine, and it doesn't go beyond that.
Right.
But really, when you think about when you think about what the purpose of pairing food and wine is, it really comes down to just our base instincts. As, you know, cave people, you know, we drove in from the dregs and we needed, you know, fat, sugar, and salt. Those were the three things that we needed to stay alive. And we crave those things. And when you have like a piece of bacon, you get all three.
Lizard
of those
brain.
Things.
Oh,
yeah.
You go straight lizard brain.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that first piece of bacon is basically the best thing you've eaten in your life. But each additional piece of bacon is a little less impressive than the one you had before. Because you start to get satiated. You get a little bit of that salt. You get a little bit of the fat. You get a little bit of the sugar. And you don't need it and crave it quite as much. When you pair the food with a really good wine and it balances properly, the acidity and the freshness and the fruitiness of it, it wipes your palate clean so that next piece of bacon is just as good as the first one. Nice. And all of our parents and I are kind of built around that principle of, can we wipe our slate clean, our palate clean, so that the second taste is just as good as the first one?
Oh, I love that. I love that. And there are some reasons why, like, the red meat and red wine go together and things like that, and white wines with fish for that very same reason, too. And tannins binding to the saliva, so tannins in the protein in the steak and everything. Yep. It's a great pairing. So I love that. It's all about balance. Balance is all about the wine.
As host of the show, I'm going to say, let's give our first pairing a try here.
Okay. Yeah. Let's dig in. So, yeah, obviously we've said we, you know, are doing Popeye's chicken with champagne. And for me, this is a contrasting pairing. So basically, we think about Popeye's chicken and why it's delicious, why we love it, because it's got this just great greasy breading on it.
It's fried.
It's fried. It's deep fried. Deep fry a boot and you eat it.
And you eat it. 100%.
But champagne, it has that acidity and freshness and lightness, and really all sparkling wine. You don't have to shell out for champagne for this. We did tonight, because why not? The champagne does really well is that it cuts through that fattiness and richness of the breading. On top of it, the way champagne is made, the way it's aged, is that it's aged what's called on the lees. And the lees are, you know, they're the dead yeast cells from fermentation.
It just sounds better when you say sur lee.
Yeah.
It's on the lees. It's on the lees.
It's all in the marketing.
That's right.
But that change, that aging, if it's
so good.
True champagne, and it's going to probably be for 2 or 3 years, if not longer, you get that flavor of the yeast kind of infuses with the wine, and you get this kind of nice bready, brioche, toasted note to it. And that gets played up by the breading on the chicken as well.
So good. It's so, such a great pairing. And what champagne are we drinking tonight?
We're doing Lancelot Pien, the Accord Majeur, and I chose this one because it has extended lees aging. It's actually aged for about 5 years, so this one has an extra intensity of that kind of breaded, you know, brioche note on the nose that should play up the chicken really nicely.
It's fantastic. And you don't know this about me, but that's my favorite thing in champagne is like extended lees aging and everything. So I picked this. I'm like, I shall be marrying this wine later.
Yeah.
That's right. It's so good. Yeah.
And I know we're not supposed to talk about this on podcast, but it's got this deep yellow color that's really, really good.
It's gorgeous.
And just as you're driving, yeah, you can imagine it.
Right. But they said, like, the smell-o-vision, the taste, like, yes, go out, come to Decanter and get this wine, because yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
And I'm going to say, while you guys were talking, I was over here enjoying my chicken and champagne. That is a
great pairing, yeah. I was going to say, yeah. Michael, make sure you eat, too. I did one crunch. I'm like, you could hear the crunch in the microphone.
Yeah, I tried to back away. I was a little worried about that.
Not the crunch in the microphone. That's what you want.
That's what we're going for.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So when you're, like I said, we talked a little bit beforehand about Monday through Thursday of people just picking, like, this is what I have night and everything.
At Decanter.
At Decanter, yes. Sorry. At Decanter here on Capitol Hill. What's your favorite pairing that you've ever had to do for somebody? Like, kind of out-of-the-box pairing?
The out-of-the-box pairing, I think really the one that always surprises everybody is, actually, it's, if I'm not jumping ahead too fast, the next one on our list. And I specifically chose this one because it's counterintuitive to a lot of people. And it's a Riesling, it's an Alsatian Riesling, it's a little touch sweet, but we're pairing it with Thai takeout, specifically green curry.
Yeah.
And
yes, we are doing that.
We are doing that.
Both of these have a lot going on. We think about the green curry. It's got of course, the spiciness from the curry, but it's also got a richness from the coconut milk in there, and like a texture, and you know, just kind of a creaminess. Okay. It's got the, you know, brightness from the peppers and the onions and all the fresh vegetables that are in it. So there are a lot of different elements and a lot of different textures and flavors. And then we get to Riesling. The same thing is going on. So many people just think Riesling sweet and end it there. And that's because we all had bad Riesling when we were drinking in college.
Blue Nun. Darn that Blue Nun.
Yeah, the Blue Nun. But, you know, Riesling, the reason there's often a little bit of sweetness in there is because it's grown so far north, and it's a really cool, short-growing climate, so it retains a lot of freshness and a lot of acidity, and it makes your mouth water. It literally makes you hungry when you drink it. But because it's such a cool climate, because it's such a short-growing climate, the grapes almost don't get fully ripe. They retain a lot of acidity. So in the winemaking process...
You want that for those
rice. You want the acidity because it's refreshing, and it makes your mouth water, and it goes well with food. But if something's too acidic, you don't want to drink it. You know, you don't want to just suck on a lemon.
Definitely not.
Definitely not. That's not going to go well.
So, you know, what you do is during the fermentation process, you kind of artificially stop it at a point so that you retain some residual sugar in there. Nice. And when the winemaker does it at just the right point, you get this really beautiful balance of all of the natural fruit flavors that are in a really complex grape like Riesling. You get that retained freshness and acidity, but then you also get weight and texture from the residual sugar in there. When you drink the wine on its own, it does taste a little sweet, which I think is what turns a lot of people off sometimes. But when you pair it with something really complex, like green curry, you know, the sugar balances the heat.
I was joking before we went on the air that I have very wimpy English-Scottish taste buds. And but this combination, this pairing has saved me in a lot of those circumstances of having just an off dry or a slightly sweet, like a little bit of residual sugar, or even in certain circumstances, like an Albarino or something like that, or even a dry Riesling can still do it and take just enough of the edge off for me. Like, oh, I can enjoy this with everyone else. And not have to have like a cup of milk on the side or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the brilliance of the little bit of sugar in it.
Yep.
And you know, we like sweet and savory pairings too. We don't admit it to ourselves, but we have them all the time.
Oh yeah.
You start your day off with a little bit of, you know, bacon and eggs with orange juice.
Oh yeah.
Yep. That's sweet and savory.
Zena hates the fact that I can drink orange juice and a glass of milk like first thing in the morning.
Oh, no.
How do you do that? I'm like, I just
do it. It's what I like.
Yeah. It's what you grow up with.
And it's also, I mean, cayenne pepper or chili pepper in chocolate is a great combination.
Exactly.
It's a great combination. And again, it's that balance. And I like what you're talking about. They add the sugar to kind of balance that acid. And it's a similar thing in champagne, the dosage that comes at the end. And like, what are your thoughts on, we've been trying at Beauty that she has the Drapier and it's the Brut Nature where they don't do that. And it's a, I like it, but it's a pretty austere.
It is.
It can be a very austere champagne.
And it's something you kind of have to work up to. It is a little bit of acquired taste. You know, like when you first have, when you turn 21, you go out for your 21st birthday. You don't start out with 18-year-old scotch.
No.
You
know?
Like it's too intense. It's too much.
Exactly. So, all right. So are we trying this pairing?
For me, it was definitely well. Oh, yeah. We're definitely going to try this. We're going to try our Thai green curry, green curry with our Riesling. Off dry.
If it, if I don't make it through this, Jimmy, it's been great. You've been here, and I'm gonna make great work.
And we're all gonna make it through it. It'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, when I've used this pairing in some of the tastings and classes we do here at Decanter, it is usually an eye-opening moment for a lot of people that all of a sudden you get all this tropical fruit from the wine.
Oh yeah.
With you know the coconut and.
That's gorgeous.
And the curry and everything.
Oh.
And
that's a gorgeous pairing right there.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah.
We're like, wow. You said eye-opening, and it is eye-opening.
That is definitely eye-opening.
It's
pore opening.
Yeah, exactly. Woo. It's my roommate in law school was the type of person that would get like the gallon thing of sliced jalapenos at Costco and have that. And I would be like, I can't even have that be near that when that's open. And she took me to my first Thai restaurant. And she finally said I could stop eating when I was crying at her. I had no idea what to order. I didn't know. I was eating the part of the rice that had not touched the sauce and like the one little, you know, triangle of like Wonder Bread that they always give you, like the toasted one. Like, that's all that I ate. Now I know I went with people that I know that were more, she was not helpful in that regard. I went with people that I, that get it in. And now I know what to order, that I can order things there, but I would typically never order this because I know I just feel like it's going to be hot. And this is so good.
Yeah.
It's a slow burn. Like I'm feeling it. I'll be feeling it for a while.
It is.
It's really, really good. And it's a great pairing. Like you said, the tropical and everything.
And it takes the heat right down. Like, I mean, it just starts to cool you off. Like my tongue was already on fire, but then you hit that and it's like, you get a lot more flavor packed.
With a really good pairing, that's what it's supposed to do. Each is supposed to elevate the other and make it more enjoyable and make you want to have that second and third bite.
That's a lovely Alsatian Riesling as well. Now, which Riesling is this?
This comes from a winery called Bestheim. Not the fanciest wine in the world, but absolutely a good representation of the region. It has all of the varietal characteristics that you want.
The aromatics and the white flower.
Peach and white flower, exactly. The pear, the little honey tone notes to it. And I tend to like a lot of the Alsatian wines compared to some of the wines from the Mosel as well. Because they have a little more weight. They got a little more texture, a little more viscosity. So... they are, they match some of these foods a little more easily sometimes.
And even in a dry Riesling, you're going to get a lot of that same flavor profile. You just won't get the touch of sweetness at the end, a little bit on that as well, because you'll still get all the same aromatics and everything.
Yeah.
It's really pretty great.
I'm not going to lie, you guys are doing great on Guy Talk.
That's true.
This is fantastic.
This is fantastic. Okay. Well, what's up next there?
Oh, are we getting on to that?
We don't have to. I'm just saying it like that.
Oh, that's fine.
Well, if we're going to still talk about Riesling, I can talk about
Riesling. Talk about Riesling. Yeah, let's talk about Riesling.
Well, you know, we...
Enjoy some food, right?
I was focusing on the curry, but, you know, I think the other thing that is a little counterintuitive is, you know, these wines, we think about Riesling that comes out of Alsace or Western Germany, you know, they're made to go with complex dishes too. But we don't think about the food of that region as being complex because it's all beige. It's just beige.
It can cut through that. The acid can cut through that beige.
Right. You get like the traditional dish of, you know, a little bit of sausage with the sauerkraut and, you know, maybe some pork in there. Yeah. There's actually a lot going on. You've got the fatty richness of the sausage. Sometimes there's some spice, you know, right. some caraway or something in there as well. In the sauerkraut, you've got a lot of acidity. And
that's why Germans, you know, we like brown sugar.
Well, no, it's usually sweetened with like some natural apples or mm-hmm. something. So you get a lot of concentrated natural sugars in there. And, yeah. you know, with that acid, the sugars, the fat, the spice, it's really the same combination we see in the green curry. It's just less colorful.
You know? It's true. True.
It doesn't always have to be colorful, though.
Yeah.
It's also a new thing, too. I mean, I think we're one of the things that we're starting to see in the wine world, I'd be curious if you are sort of the, it's very Eurocentric. The terminology is very Eurocentric.
Absolutely, 100%.
And now you have regions in you know, China as well as Southeast Asia that are becoming very big consumers and starting to produce wines mm-hmm. and trying to change. And one of the things in my studies is, like, Zena grew up in, like, the south of France, like, drinking currant or having currant dishes. And I was like, I don't know what a currant tastes like. I never had that growing up in rural Missouri. I'm like, that was not a thing.
Right.
So, like, learning the new flavor profiles, like, how does somebody that doesn't have those descriptors, you know, talk about the wine in the same way? And I think you did a great job of, like, talking about, like, how this, like the coconut, and they were like, it pairs great with the tropical notes of this that they might find there, that they might have those same descriptors.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I remember doing a tasting a couple years ago with a fellow who grew up in South Korea. And we're sitting there, we're doing the tasting, and, you know, we're going through this red wine. And, you know, all of us, I should say, all of us kind of Western European centric sort of individuals in the group, you know, we're all just kind of puzzled by the wine. Like, there's something I can't pick up. There's something that's there. And fellow from South Korea, he was just like, oh yeah, it's the sweet red bean curd. And we're like, as soon as he said it,
that's exactly right. Yeah.
He grew up with it. We did not.
Right.
And I think for a lot of these descriptors, it really is just coming back with the flavors that you're comfortable with.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And that, you know,
yeah.
And I've had over the years. I'm with you, and my palate is not that, or my vocabulary of different flavors is not vast.
It's just practice. And that's one of the fun things is when you have an environment, which I think we try to do on the podcast, and I know Zena does at Beauty and you guys do here, of, you know, that it's supposed to be fun and just shout things out. Like what are you tasting? And you had talked earlier about like having a class that's not like a W7, like they're, you know, people, but everybody gets it. Like they get it, they're less intimidated by just saying, oh, it's this, I'm tasting this and this.
Yeah. We do a class here called Wine Tasting Like a Sommelier. And you know, it's just meant for everybody to come in and just get that little mm-hmm. taste of like what it's like to be a sommelier and how they think about it, you know, going through that very kind of structured process of evaluating wine. But, and you know, so many people say like, it all tastes like white wine to me. And that's absolutely not true.
Yeah.
And we go around the class.
There are snobs of all kinds.
Yeah.
And that's also.
But we go around the class and everybody gives their own description. And by the time we've gone around, everybody's hit all the kind of classic, you know, typical descriptions for that wine. It's really just about having the vocabulary. And kind of to that point, you know, we were saying my wife, she grew up in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And that's one of the fun things we have about here at the store is, you know, when we taste together, we taste different things. You know, she picks out the mango and the jackfruit and things that she grew up with that I did not.
Yeah. I know. Zena just brought me back a bottle from a Polish grocery store in Long Island. She brought me back a bottle of black currant and an entire jar of gooseberries because she's like, you love Sauvignon Blanc. This is your thing. And I'm like, we don't. Gooseberry was not a thing that we grew up with in Missouri. Cherry, I can pick cherry out. Cherry pie, I've had that, you know, and apples, stuff like that. But
you're going to learn to pick out gooseberry.
I'm going to learn to pick out gooseberry because she brought me a giant jar of it.
Oh, I know, so, what she brought.
Yeah. It's like a lot.
All your tasting notes are all just, you know, Kansas City barbecue.
Kansas City barbecue, exactly. You know, like exactly.
Gooey butter pies.
Oh, yeah. Ah, see, that's fondness in my heart. The gooey butter cake, yeah.
Have any of them tasted like that yet?
No. No. That's a sugar shock. That's like you get to have a tiny sliver of it, and then you got to lay down because you're going into a sugar coma.
Yeah, so far the only thing, this might be a little embarrassing, that I've been able to introduce Zena to is deep-fried Oreos.
Deep-fried Oreos.
Those are great. That's American ingenuity at its best.
We stopped at one stand, and they had a sign for them, and they're like, can I get some deep-fried Oreos? They're like, oh, we just ran out of Oreos. And I was like, well, what else do you got? They're like, deep-fried Twinkies. And I was like, yeah,
we'll take that. I mean, I used to go back every year for the Missouri State Fair. It's just like, that's like sense memory of childhood. That's my sense memory of childhood. It was like pineapple whip. So pineapple is one that I can't wait. We'd have pineapple. But I took a friend out there that was from here, and I said, we're going to get the breaded tenderloin sandwich. And he said, okay, and it came out, and you know, it's like, there's the bun, and then there's the tenderloin. That's like the size of a football. It's flat.
That's how you make it.
I'm like, it's two sandwiches in one. You just cut that side off, and then you do it. But that would go great with these.
Now, that's interesting. I grew up in Indiana, so I grew up with the breaded tenderloin.
Yeah.
My experience is that it's never two sandwiches. It's always just one.
It can be. It can. You're going to not feel the best the length of thing, but yeah. But yeah, but like trying to get, and they had deep fried Twinkies there and everything. And I also was like, you know, corn dogs. That was a big thing that we were like, how would you pair with a corn dog? Because I'm like, it's got to be fresh. They've got to dip it. And then the best places are the ones that have the bowl of mustard with a paintbrush because that's how you appropriately put mustard on there. But what would you pair with a corn dog?
With a corn dog? I mean, hate to sound like a broken record, but a champagne would be great.
Right? I was kind of thinking the same thing.
It's the same concept.
It is the same concept. Fat, breading,
fried
it's
with,
perfect.
You know, meat in the middle.
I think you're right. I think it's 100%. They need to sponsor that at the state fair, right? I think.
Yeah. Oh, that would be
fun. Actually, though, if I'm not going to say the exact same thing again, if I need to choose a red, I'd probably go with like a Beaujolais.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it's light, it's fruity, it's, you know, a lot of fun.
Be perfect.
Yeah. And, you know, we think about hot dogs and, you know, toppings. You know, like my absolute favorite is the Chicago dog. But, you know, where you've got all the tomatoes and, you know, your relish and everything, which actually adds a decent amount of sweetness to it.
It does.
A nice Beaujolais that's kind of light and fruity and easy. It kind of does that same thing.
It's nice. Yeah. I like it.
Not going to lie, when Zena and I went there, I definitely saw a little hot dog stand, and I was like, I'm going to go get a hot dog. She looks at me and goes, seriously? She's like, come on, you know I can't resist that.
The hot dogs are
good. Good hot dog stand is a good hot dog stand. She goes, you know it's not good. I was like, it's horrible. I was like, it's going to be great.
that's part of the charm.
Get to go to New York and get a dirty water dog, man. Go to Nathan's. Like, that's a thing to do. So, all right. Well, speaking of...
I'll go to 7-Eleven and get the hot dog from there, the Oscar Mayer wiener, you know, that's all heated up, get the quarter.
We've all been there, Jimmy. Like, we've all been there.
Well, yeah, but then I run to Wendy's and I get their chili and I put that on instead of using their free chili.
I feel like a different podcast of like drunk food. So what do you pair with drunk food? You're like,
drunk food.
Your most least expensive bottle because you're already drunk.
The point of drunk food is you're not supposed to be drinking anymore.
Right. It was like that. Like, that's a good first or second bottle of wine. You do not want somebody opening up like the classic, you know, amazing bottle of wine and like your fifth bottle. You're like, ah, darn. We had that on the Sauvignon Blanc tasting when I was like, I would have really liked to have remembered that one more.
I hate to say, but day after is always a shepherd's pie and a Guinness to get me ready.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good classic.
Well, they say it takes a lot of beer. It takes a lot of beer and whiskey to make good wine. So. Well, we kind of transitioned into the red, so.
Yeah. So shall we move on with our next pairing?
Yeah.
I think we're trying the Chipotle bowl.
The Chipotle bowl.
Chipotle bowl, yes.
And what are we pairing with that?
So we've got a...
You can take a sip first. It's okay.
It's okay. I'm gonna talk through it.
Okay.
So we've got a Carmenere.
Oh, yeah.
And Carmenere, if for those who are not familiar with Carmenere, it's the... one of the more common red grapes coming out of Chile, and it's traditionally a Bordeaux variety, but they don't grow very much of it in Bordeaux anymore. It's a little difficult to ripen and requires a long growing season, which Chile's got a long growing season. They've had more success with it. But what you notice about Carmenere, it's closely related to Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Sauvignon Blanc. And all of these grapes that we associate with Bordeaux, when they're picked a little underripe, or if they've been in a cool climate, they all have this kind of distinct sort of green pepper,
vegetable thing going on.
In Sauvignon Blanc, it might be like lemongrass or something. And that it's that green pepper combined with a lot of the kind of the juicy red fruit for me makes it great with Chipotle, because Chipotle, you always get those.
Well, there's a good amount of like plum in there too.
Yeah.
Get a little leather taste already off of it.
Oh, yeah.
But you get a lot of the grilled peppers and onions. And really, Carmenere for me, it's like anything that falls in that Tex-Mex, Southwestern family where you have a lot of those grilled peppers and onions and everything. I love to go with Carmenere because of all of those Bordeaux varieties, the Merlot, the Cabernet Sauvignons, the Sauvignon Blancs, that all have this property of pyrazines that brings out that green pepper, either peppercorn or green bell pepper or red bell pepper, lemongrass, however it presents itself, Carmenere seems to have the most of it. And especially when it comes from Chile, they get full ripeness from it. So it always has that nice plush, soft berry fruit, really soft tannins, very chuggable, I think, is the technical wine term.
Quaffable. I think Zena calls it quaffable. It's a very quaffable wine. I'm like, potato, potato, wine shots. Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. No, that's a great pairing. And we went with the carne asada.
Yeah.
I would like give the shout out.
Yeah, because then you get like the little bit of smokiness in there as well. And
it's a good pairing with the smoke.
You can do far worse on a Tuesday night or in a lunch.
The lunch, exactly. Now that's a lovely pairing. I wonder if they'll try to bring, they're talking about with climate change that they're pulling some of the Merlots out of Bordeaux and putting more Malbecs in.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of that, there's a whole lot of.
Oh my goodness.
People doing things. You like
just changed Chipotle for me.
The lights just came on. All the stuff like that. We were taking. Which of the Chipotle bowls to get?
Yeah, if any of my suppliers are listening, find me half bottles of Carmenere, because we get so many people walking in here getting takeout from the Chipotle down the street. And
you got Chipotle?
Good, after work or lunchtime something. Half bottles or lunchtime.
Julia Coney, when she did one of her things, that she talked about that she worked in a boutique wine store, and there was a Potbelly, a Chipotle, and then a small little restaurant, and they got their menus every week, so they knew what was being on the menu so that they could rep it. And she said, I'd be like, all right, is it a burrito or a burrito bowl? Yeah. All right, I know exactly what I'm going to give you. Yeah. And like pairing the wines with that, like that is a huge thing. And so that's a great idea. You should do that. Like, here you go. Take this with you.
Exactly.
Here's your Chipotle pack.
Yeah.
On the thing that you're talking about, like, yeah, marketing. So no, that's an excellent pairing though. I like that a lot.
And Carmenere, my experience is it's never been particularly dear. It's always one of the most affordable wines. Like that price to quality ratio on the shelf, it always punches above its weight class. And for the longest time, it's just been a good go-to.
And is this a single varietal?
That's what it says on the bottle, but it only has to be 85%.
That's right. And which one, and what are we drinking here?
So we have the Villeminant, and once again,
which region is this?
It's out of the Colchagua Valley.
Okay.
Very much,
A little spice on the back
of the jalapeno.
Yeah.
But,
excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But yeah, the Colchagua Valley, it's definitely one of the more prestigious regions in Chile. But, Carmenere seems to have found its home there. Along with Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon, you see a lot of really good wine coming out of there. I can't think of the last time I had a bad bottle from that region.
It's true. I agree. And I love Chilean wines. And we just got in week six of my WSET, the level 10, we just got to the New World because it's very, the British. The British are setting this up. So we just did Chile last week, and we were talking about these wines. So I was like, "Oh, which valley?"
I'm more. I tend to taste more Argentinian wines.
You okay? Well, they can do that.
Malbecs
too.
Are popular. Malbecs Everybody are popular. Loves Malbec.
Everybody loves Malbec.
I'll see what we carry.
See what we carry. Yeah. No, they're both great. South American wine, and like you said, like they're great values and really, really high end wine, and they're really getting into sustainable wine there as well because they're having challenges with water. Obviously, is one of the things that's always happens.
Right.
In that region, but yeah, there's some fascinating things going on in there.
It's kind of an overlooked region in many ways. Like Chile, they, you know, especially throughout the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, arguably made affordable everyday wine better than anybody else in the world.
Yeah.
And they just sold copious amounts of it, which was great for their industry, but also almost a little problematic in that all of us started expecting that Chilean wine should always be just very quaffable, easy drinking, inexpensive.
But nothing spectacular.
Right. And, you know, we've got a new generation of Chilean wine
markers.
They're like,
hold my beer.
Exactly.
But a lot of them have really dug into some of these old heirloom varieties that were planted there, you know, 100, 150 years ago that are still in place. Like some things that we almost never see in the U.S., like Pais making a big comeback. Old vine Carignan that can be extremely expressive out of these 100, 150-year-old vines that you just don't see anywhere else in the world. You know, we're starting to see a lot more of it coming out of Chile, and it's pretty exciting.
And it's kind of interesting, too, with the... I'm sorry, Jimmy, go ahead.
Oh, I was just curious. What is your wine knowledge history? Because you are blowing my mind. You have a lot of knowledge here. I'm just curious.
No, I've just been running this store for 13 years. you know, my wife and I, when we first got into wine before opening Decanter, she had the job of opening the bottle of wine. It was my job to, you know, cook dinner, and it was very much a shared interest, but... we were both very much nerds in school, which probably attracted us to the D.C. region. This is where nerds unite. And
nerd prom. Exactly. Yeah, they called it the nerd prom, yeah.
But, you know, I found an old copy of the Hugh Johnson World Atlas of Wine. And, you know, when we opened up a bottle, we'd kind of turn to the section and, you know, read about... you know, that region and that particular wine style.
Cool.
And it was a really nice, easy way to get into wine because to just sit down with the Hugh Johnson Atlas of Wine and read it front to back is, one, extremely overwhelming, but two, extremely boring.
Yeah, but, yeah, exactly.
But you read it two pages at a time, and it's really interesting. Really,
and you're connecting it with what you're drinking at the time and what you're eating and all the things.
It is, and it's an... I will say this, wine books are underrated travel guides as well.
Very much so. No, that's
vineyards
a great
are point. Always in beautiful areas. They've come with good food cultures.
Grapes don't grow in ugly places.
Exactly. So you get a good wine book and you've got a good travel guide as well.
I love that.
I just use Zena as my travel guide. You know, she does really good.
She's great at that. So Jimmy, so far, what's been your favorite pairing so far?
Oh my gosh, so far. Well, we all know I'm a red wine drinker.
So yeah, yes.
So definitely.
But I see both your champagne and your Riesling is empty.
I'm not.
So I feel like you're growing as a person.
So far, my favorite pairing. I could not stop with the champagne and the chicken.
Yeah, I mean that's a good pairing. It's just a good pairing. It's just great and.
It's like peanut butter and jelly for the wine.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It went so well together because it really just, you know, the champagne just cuts through the breading and everything on it. And it just, it brings it out.
I love
the butter makes it softer, nicer to eat and just everything about it.
Everything is about it. It's all about the pairing. It's so great. It's so great.
And it's so bubbles. What's not to like?
I know.
Every day is a celebration when you got
every day is a celebration. I know. What's the only good thing to come out of... Well, there are two good things to come out of Sideways. One is Virginia Madsen's monologue about wine changing. And the other was when she says... it's her both times when she's like, the day you drink that wine is a good day. Like, you don't need to wait for a special occasion.
Right.
You drink that wine, it's a special occasion. And these days with chaos being around us, it's like, you know what? Let's just go ahead and drink the champagne. Like, let's just have it. Absolutely. Let's just have it. And now you can order Popeyes and just have champagne, and you've got your perfect high-low pairing, as they say.
Is there one near Beauty? Because
is there one? There's some good fried chicken in the National Landing. You can go to Queen Mother's and things like that.
You go down Glebe Road there. There's one at the end.
Yeah, there's one at the end of Glebe Road.
My neck of the woods. Everyone tells me I need to go to Kebab Palace down there. What would pair well with that?
Kebab Palace?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good spot. Right? That's the reason to pick up someone at National Airport.
That's where you go to Beauty now for that. And sit there and wait for their plane to land.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good thing.
That's going to be my goal, is finding what I like to pair with it.
But that's right.
What would you suggest?
Yeah, I'd probably stray Spanish, like good Tempranillo. You know, I mean, it's tough to go, especially like a young Tempranillo, without a lot of oak aging. You know, one of the Hofens, or if it just says Rioja, without any other words, Crianza or Reserva or something.
That'd be really good.
Yeah, that's going to be just a nice, young, fresh.
I'm not going to lie. This is the first thing I've actually understood this entire conversation.
That's not true, Jimmy. You know more than you let on.
Sometimes.
Because you have, you have a engineering problem solver mind. So. Like, for me, learning about wines became, like, it fully connected with, like, the lawyer brain. Mm-hmm. I'm like, especially, like, blind tastings. I'm like, this is deductive. Like, I can go through, and when I sell, I'm like, wait, there's tricks? There's tricks at how they do things, mm-hmm. like left bank and right bank, like all that stuff. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. And I'm like, it's a puzzle. And you like to figure things out. So that's, you can say all you want, but you know more about wine than you let on.
I'm not going to lie.
He's a ringer.
Friday night, Zena pours me a glass. She goes, what do you want? I was like, red. And she goes, try this, and pours a glass and put it in my, cup, and I start swirling it, and I go to sniff, and Sarah was there, and she goes, look at you. She goes, you're growing up right in front of my eyes.
Right in front of my eyes.
She goes, what are you drinking? I was like, I don't know. She just wanted me to try it. So
she wanted to try it.
Here I am, it's trying this. It.
You're like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get a little air on that. And on that, what is our last wine?
Oh, yeah.
Our last pairing, because this would be one of my...
Oh,
if I could ever get my mom to drink wine, it might be this pairing.
Oh, and what is this pairing, Renee? What are we about to pair?
A Five Guys cheeseburger. Whew. And Michael, will have to tell us what the wine is.
Yeah, so we have a red blend out of the Columbia Valley of Washington.
Perfect.
And it's about 50% Zinfandel. The remainder,
yeah, look at
Cabernet,
that color.
Sauvignon, and Syrah. So it's a big, juicy, kind of boozy at around 15% alcohol.
Ooh, hello.
Oh, it's dark, too.
Yeah, it's
Zinfandel Cab. So you get, yeah, those are all big.
This is the type of wine you have after the kids have gone to bed and it's
and you want to go to bed.
The fireplace is going.
This is not a day drinking wine. At 15%, you're like, we're going to have to take a little nap now.
Yeah. I was going to say, unless you want the nap by 10. No.
The nap by 10. I'm like, ooh.
But no, right. I mean, for the engineers amongst us, this is about, pairing.
Don't give me too much credit. My father is a professional engineer. I am a mechanic. In some countries, that's considered an engineer, but not here.
I don't know what's going on underneath the hood of my car these days.
Neither do I.
Okay.
Thank goodness for YouTube.
YouTube and Google. It's like the Matrix.
That's what my doctor said.
Well, that and 30 years of knowledge gives us...
It gives you a little something.
It gives us a better idea.
But, it's pairing like with like. A Five Guys burger. I absolutely love a Five Guys burger. It's my... Of everything we're having tonight, it is my guilty pleasure. And
unfortunately, it was first here and last to be eaten. So.
It's still good. It's the meat, the cheese, all the flavor,
cheeseburger. It's like amazing.
The mayo and mustard, there's a lot of flavor, it's a lot of texture, a lot of weight. You need a wine that's big and full
and has acid.
Hold up and has acid.
And it's got some acid in it, yeah.
And that'll punch you in the face a little.
Which is why you need to pair it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you pair them.
Yeah, so when I was thinking about this, we always talk about tannin in red wine right. as being something that adds structure and gives you texture. Something that I feel like frequently gets overlooked is alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And this being around 15%, you know, that's the weight and texture of wine comes from the alcohol. So when we talk about like light-bodied, medium-bodied, full-bodied right. wine, we're talking about the amount of alcohol in there, or at the very least, our perception of the alcohol.
Right.
So, you know, light body being like skim milk, you know, medium 2%, and full bodied being whole milk.
Okay.
Yes, whole milk. Huh?
Yeah.
No, I mean, mouth, it's the milk, it coating the mouth.
The extra
coating.
Alcohol gives you that
right.
texture. So we look at something like the Riesling that was around 11% alcohol. And then we've got this that's 15% alcohol. That doesn't sound like that big of a jump, but it's 40% more.
But it is, yeah. yeah. but it is.
So when you've got a lot...
And that's why they don't use those percentages.
Right.
Like, yes.
Wait till we start talking about your whiskeys.
yeah.
Oh, I know about those.
Why they come in much smaller portions.
exactly. Or fortified wines.
Yeah, but you talk. You think about like the richness and the... You know, the body and the texture of the burger and the cheese and everything that's in there, you need something that can match that, that can hold up to that weight. So like with our very first pairing with the champagne and fried chicken, it was really about kind of cutting through it and refreshing your palate. At this point, you know, when we've got this big, you know, flavorful dish.
You're trying to find something that complements it.
Yeah, right. Complements it. That,
sorry, I didn't mean to speak.
No, no, you're...
Like,
you're
I'm just literally enjoying it as I'm talking. Yeah.
You're like, no, it's great. It does
That's
complement
exactly
it.
That's exactly what it does. And I particularly like the wines of Eastern Washington. They do a great job up there. You know, for a long time, they've always had the reputation of having very high quality, but not being as quite as precious as some of the Napa and Sonoma wines.
Right.
I think it's changing a little bit. People have definitely caught on to the fact that, you know, Washington State has some really good high quality.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's catching up a little bit.
but I mean, and I would have normally thought of Washington State for more whites.
Mm-hmm.
And think sure. of the whites and Rieslings and things like that. They do some lovely Rieslings there as well. But that's I like this.
Yeah.
And I like all three of those varietals too. So.
Yeah, and Zinfandel kind of gets overlooked sometimes because you know you can find some mm-hmm. really juicy, jammy styles that border borderline sweet. But you know when they in the hands of the right vintner and the right winemaker, they retain a lot of acidity and freshness and just give you that big punch of a lot of berry flavor.
I always do a shout out because Zina, one of the things that Debbie said, they are obsessed, London is obsessed with white Zinfandel.
yeah.
And it, you know, it's terrible wine, but it's responsible for why we have so many great Zinfandels now.
Yeah.
Because it kept the vines, they were going to pull the vines and it kept the vines in the vineyards. And then now they've all switched from doing white Zinfandels to some really amazing Red blends and single varietal Zinfandels and old vine Zinfandels and all. Like those old vines are like, that's because they were doing white Zinfandel for so long.
I remember when I was going through WSET and I knew that white Zinfandel was on the test and I hadn't had it in years. So mm-hmm. I go down to the local grocery store. and at this point we had the store and I, wherever I went, I saw customers. Anytime you're in the grocery store, so
oh yeah,
you've got this reputation for like the small little boutique, organic and biodynamic.
Always find just the weakest moment, right?
I've got it like underneath my coat, this, making sure nobody sees me.
It's for class.
Oh, that's how mechanics hide their wine too.
Right. Under the hood.
What you got? It's a bottle of bourbon. I swear. Like, just leave me alone.
It's not a rosé. One of the first episodes that Guy talked with Jimmy was real men drink rosé. Like,
yeah.
For sure, because it's great wine.
Yeah.
But no, that's an excellent pairing, though. I love that pairing. And Columbia Valley, that's great.
Yeah. Columbia Valley, they make good wine. Yeah, they're high mountain desert, so it's oddly of an ideal growing climate. They can control exactly how much water that those vines get through their irrigation programs. And when it's really hot during the day with lots of sunlight, lots of growing hours that far north. They get really terrific ripeness in the fruit, a lot of hang time. And then with the very low humidity, the temperature drops at night. They preserve,
get the diurnal shift.
Yeah, oh, they preserve so a lot of that acidity, freshness. And it's just, it's a great place to grow grapes.
You know, listening to you guys talk about wine making, or, you know, grape growing and everything over the podcast seasons.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts about that is you guys always talk about how the conditions are so great. You can control this and watch that. Yet, whenever you go anywhere, like a vineyard, and they teach you about wines, they're always like, yeah, so you really want to stress that vine out. It's like, so you hear about, oh, it's great climate. To what? Stress it out?
You want to stretch it. Well, yeah. And there's differences. Like you want healthy soil, but not overly fertile. Like, you know, all right, the different things that they'll do. But it's a balance. Like, they're magicians in the vineyard. And it's funny because, again, I grew up on a farm. My mom's 85, still has cattle. And she, like, from a very early age was like, office job. This is too hard. I'm not doing it. And she thinks it's hysterical that I'm, like, obsessed with farming now and all the different soil types and climatic influences and all these different things and everything. Yeah. And I'm like, it's so great. But you see, like, and it's such a dicey proposition. It's why, like, the old joke is, how do you get a small fortune in the wine business?
Yeah.
You start with a large one. Yeah. And because it rains at the wrong time and you may have lost 80% or frost worse, because that could be two seasons that it could take things out.
Well, no, it's funny that you mentioned, though, you always have to stress the vines,
which is true.
Yeah. But you think, like, what a really good coach does, what do? They
push you to your limits.
They push you to your limits, and they provide the right amount of stress
so
that, like, when you do have to perform. Right.
They want you to know
break
your
you
body.
Down to build you up.
Yeah. Your mind quits before your body.
Yeah.
But also, I don't want to break your body because you got to play in tomorrow's game.
right. And a good coach knows where that balance is. Yeah. A good vintner knows where that balance is.
Yeah. How do you do?
Thank you. That was an excellent explanation of it.
There you go.
I really appreciate that.
Guy talk.
Guy talk, right?
Thanks for letting me listen in, guys.
Oh, no. This has been awesome. Like I've said, I've just been sitting back and enjoying all this food. I was like, the one I definitely want to get back and do more of is the green curry
with
the off-dry Riesling.
That's good.
Like, yeah, I could sit down with a Netflix and, you know, movie night and just go on that.
Okay, I have some fun, just like throw out some fast food pairings for you.
Oh, okay.
So we hit a lot of highlights today. But let's say, what's your favorite pizza, Jimmy?
Gosh, I can't even say that because people really kill me. My actual favorite pizza.
Is it Hawaiian pizza?
Yeah. I enjoy a good one.
Because that interview ends right now.
I do.
No, I like Hawaiian pizza too. Like, it's totally fine.
I like Hawaiian pizza.
Again, why?
What?
Salty, sweet. It's the combinations we talk about. You don't have to call it pizza.
It's still a crime against humanity.
Like, I hate to say it. I'm a little pizza snob this way, but I need Pizza Hut pizza. It's either got to be extra cheese.
We're going to have to work on that definition of pizza snob.
Or Supreme.
Okay, Supreme. That's good. Like, that's a good thing.
Like, okay. Have the pan crust. It's
What are you pairing with the pan? Pan crust. Deluxe.
Pizza Hut Deluxe. Supreme.
Supreme pizza from. You got black olives. You got green peppers. You got onions.
Pepperoni on it.
Pepperoni sausage.
Honestly, you know, pizza and wine, it goes so well together. Honestly, any half bottle of red that I have.
Why you gotta limit us to a half bottle, Michael? Like, why you gotta do?
You know why? Because what happens?
Oh, there's a reason for this. Okay.
So here's what happened. Because, you know, nothing ever good starts with, so when I was drinking this bottle of water.
But exactly.
No, this is exactly what happens is, you know, we do a bunch of tastings and events here at the store and everything.
Yeah.
You know, I don't actually choose wine for myself. I choose whatever is left over from the store that day.
Yeah.
So
it's become a reverse pairing.
It has, but it's become a running joke between my wife and I that if she goes out of town for the weekend and she, you know, calls, her first question isn't like, you know, how are you doing? It's what did you order from Domino's? You know? She knows.
See, and I'd be like a dumb, like, thin crust I like thin crust. Oh.
And well, if we're talking Domino's, no, I go thin crust and
deluxe, but the supreme pizza there today. Okay.
Oh, no, I do the Philly cheesesteak.
The Philly cheesesteak. Okay, yeah.
It's so good.
Make it up.
It's so good.
Okay, what's another bit of fast food? So let's say we did Chipotle today, so Taco Bell.
Oh, good Crunchwrap.
So,
Crunchwrap. But ground beef.
Yeah, wow.
A classic pairing.
I don't think I've ever been to Taco Bell earlier than 2 a.m.
You can forget the run for the border. How about a Mexican wine? Or a nice choice like that.
Gosh, what I do. If I was pairing of the four tonight, I would actually probably put it with champagne.
Yeah. I'd probably lean into the ground beef and cheesiness and
yeah.
go something just kind of juicy and ripe, you know, like a Zinfandel or
yeah.
you know, an Australian Shiraz or something.
Okay. Ooh.
That's a good guy. Yeah, that's
a Shiraz, yeah. Shiraz, as they say. Especially ice cream.
Ice cream. That's a great question.
I was going to say Jenny's gooey butter cake ice cream.
In that case.
No, that's a lot. That's a lot in one thing.
I'm pouring Tokai over it.
Tokai ice. Nice. Okay. Perfect. Perfect. Okay.
Let's say you're late for work. Are you going to pick champagne or coffee? Ooh, sorry. Hit a chair, people.
Champagne or coffee if you're late for work?
If you're late for work, yeah.
Oh, coffee. I'm coffee all day until at least 5 o'clock.
Oh, I'm still coffee. And then people go, we all know that's not coffee. Yeah. That's I'm like, you can taste it.
It's coffee-esque. It's coffee-esque.
It's always coffee. No, I drink coffee all day long. What do you think the most underrated fast food item to pair with wine is?
It's a good question. You're supposed to give me these questions ahead of time.
Heck no. I don't want to prepare you for it.
Ooh. You know, I think probably the thing I get actual cravings for more than anything else is McDonald's French fries.
Oh, yeah.
And in which case, it is probably just going to be something bubbles. I'm a big fan for cava. I
love cava.
Day in and day out.
I was saying I like cava, too.
Yeah.
Don't hate to say it. Step into that power.
Yeah. I
like it.
There are so many really great cava producers, mm-hmm. and it's really tough to find a bad one. Many of them are working organically and biodynamically, which I know totally contradicts saying I'm picking up McDonald's fries, but you know, usually winemakers that are working that way are making good wine.
True.
And yeah, the bubbles are going to be great with the fries.
Oh, I'm going to have to try that.
Nice thing.
Yeah. I always go in there. But I got one more.
Oh, you got one more, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, one car you'd most like to drink wine in. Obviously, parked, of course, not driving.
Parked, of course.
M-Series, M-Series BMW, you know, 5 nice. Series in there.
Nice.
Five, yeah.
Okay.
What kind of wine are you drinking in it? Parked, of course.
Parked, of course.
Or with a driver.
Well, I feel like I have to go German just because it's a BMW.
A cabinet. Yes.
So I'd probably go with a Sylvaner. It's a dry, minerally wine, very refreshing.
I like it.
Yeah.
After a long day of driving those long, curvy, hard roads. Yeah.
That's what I think.
No, it's crisp. It's refreshing. Makes your mouth water.
So let me do this last
go for it.
So when you, end of the day, you've mm-hmm. been here all day, like that, when you just want a glass of wine, what are you drinking?
Excellent, Chris. Question. I like that.
You want to know the honest answer? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. If I've been here. Wait,
actually, hold on. I know the honest answer because being a partner of someone at a wine bar, I do the same thing. It's whatever is left open and has to be
Or whiskey. I was going to say a whiskey or a beer. Yeah.
Being a small business owner,
yes,
that usually means you don't have a lot of time off.
Yeah. Right.
And if it's been several days in a row
yeah.
Where we've been here without or several weeks in a row without an actual day off, it's probably a gin martini.
And that's fair. That's fair. I was, because I do, I want to ask, I just thought of this because I know we had your lovely wife on the podcast earlier and talked about how much you travel quite a bit with wine.
Yeah.
What's the most unusual pairing that you found?
You know,
in travels,
so,
or the one that you love the most,
yeah,
which could be something simple.
About once a year, we do these we do trips with our customers, and the most recent one I did was back in March. We went down to South Africa through a lot of the Cape winelands,
so nice there.
We were having dinner one evening, and it was a dish that was it was like tuna with a lot of kind of local tropical fruits. I think there was like some mango in there, a little passion fruit, a couple other things that I forget that were specific to South Africa. And it was that fresh tuna. I think it was just like lightly seared and everything, kind of like an ahi. And they were pairing it with this specific wine. It was a Chardonnay. And I was actually familiar with the wine. And it was an oaked style of Chardonnay, kind of buttery and everything. And I looked at the pairing, I'm like, this is going to completely overpower this dish. This is, I don't know why they're doing this. And that's the mind frame I had coming into it. Turned out after 2 weeks in South Africa, it was by far the best pairing I possibly had. Because something in the wine just like, it matched Click those tropical it. Fruits so perfectly. It was so surprising. Yeah. And, I made a point of like, pulling both like the sommelier and the general manager over, be like, 2 weeks here, this is by far the best pairing. I don't know how you did it. It doesn't make sense on paper. Like the oak and the butter should have messed with all of this. But those who are turning up their noses up at, you know, buttery oaky Chardonnay should not always be doing it. It can surprise you from time to time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's a great example of how even people that are in the business and have a great deal of education on it through just experience and whatever else, keeping an open mind and allowing yourself to be able to just like, okay, I totally miscalled that. That's fantastic. I love that. And I love South Africa. I've been there twice and do things. It's great food there.
Yeah.
Even when you have no idea what you're having, you're like, I don't recognize that word, but okay, we're going to go with that.
I just keep an open mind because, we have a deli that we go to, and my boss started something, and he's just like, yeah, I'm going to try to get something different off the menu every time we go there. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to try that, too.
I'm going to try that, too. Hey.
Because, like, you kind of get used to always getting the same
thing. Well, and it's, I think our first episode in season one was you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so it's a great way to just kind of keep that student mentality about all of it. Michael, this has been fantastic.
Yeah. Is there anything you'd like to say about Decanter?
What do you got coming up?
We've got quite a few things coming up. In just a couple weeks, we have one of our biggest tasting events of the year called Bottled Art. It's a walk around tasting of about 25 high-end wines. Really great opportunity to try a lot of things that you don't normally open up for yourself, you know, and when it's Chipotle night and you kind of usually don't pick up those higher end wines, so you know, some of those nice Bordeaux's, champagnes, and some off the beaten path finds that we're just really excited about and geek out about.
And that's November 8th, 12 to 2 p.m.
It's November 8th, and actually we've got three different sessions.
Oh, three different sessions, okay.
They're two-hour sessions, so starting at 12.
Starting at 12, okay. That's what I'm reading your sign behind you on the one.
Choose whichever is your favorite, but we'll be announcing our next wine trip very soon, so that'll be exciting, and then...
Where can you get that information at?
That'll be on our website, decanterwines.com.
Awesome.
And, of course, on our Instagram feed, at Decanter Wines, that's certainly where we're most active these days. So, but lots of events, tastings, we're always doing something.
I feel you on that. Michael, thank you very much for being here on Guy Talk, even though I pretty much just sat back and ate.
You did not. Night. You talked and you
said. Yeah, but it was nice. I'm not
Thank you for
it.
Providing my dinner for me.
Oh, yeah. You got a lot left over. Yeah. It's like 14 pounds of a burrito bowl.
I was going to say, we're going to get off air here and
go through that. So, here's like Cheers, and thank everybody. You. Cheers. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks
so
for having
pair
me.
Your wines with fast food people.
Oh yeah,
that's good.
All day, every day.
All day, every day. That champagne is magical.